Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Dana Buckler Show. My name is Dana, and welcome back, Jason.
Thank you. Great to be here.
We did it. One week later.
On schedule.
Now, when we last left off, you and I had a discussion about the Batman movies from 1989 all the way through the Justice League. And,
yes. You
know, we talked about the good, the bad, and the questionable.
Yep.
That's for sure. And
yep.
We left off that episode with a really excited, we're going to see Batman, the Batman, Matt Reeves, the Batman. You got tickets to the early IMAX screening.
Yeah, Tuesday, 7 p.m.
And listen, all the pieces were falling into place.
Yep.
Now, we decide to stop at a restaurant, grab a burger, a beer. It was right in the parking lot of the movie theater.
Yep.
Anticipation is starting to build. And as we're walking from the restaurant to the movie theater,
you got a little too excited.
I made a comment to you that this should be interesting because, you know, I've got a really bad track record of things happening to me at the movie theater.
You do. Yes.
And you know, longtime listeners of the show will know, they just have to listen to the movie theater rant episodes to know that these things happen. And I kind of said it in a sort of a tongue-in-cheek type way, like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen this time, you know. So we get to this theater, and I've discussed this before. Like we talked about when we saw Scream, you know, there are two movie theaters in this town now. Well, there's other ones, but there's two main ones. Regal
yeah.
Cinema, and then they opened up an Epic Theater, which is a much more modern theater with the big Lazy Boys, and, you know, that's where everyone goes.
Yes.
But they don't have an IMAX at the Epic Theater, and this was an IMAX exclusive screening. So this was the busiest that I had seen the Regal in a couple of years.
Oh, I mean, I think when I booked the tickets, they came out through the Regal app about 30 days ahead of time. And when I booked the tickets, I booked two, and there were about six other people that had booked at that time.
Yeah.
So probably early February. By the time I re-looked at it the day before, there were about 15 seats left.
And those are sporadic. Most yes. of them are like the very front row. There'd be the yep. odd single seat. You know, I tend to sit in the twosies, which are the two seats on the right and the left. Well, listeners, you'll be happy to know that Jason got seats in the it was
close
15 and 16.
Yeah, I always pick, you know, just off center. So if I got to go to the bathroom on a 3-hour movie,
yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to disrupt the entire audience.
That was really good planning on your part. So we get in there, huge line for concessions.
Yes.
And I'm just like, I'm good.
I just had a burger.
I can't
start the movie.
I can't start. And you're like, no, I got to have my popcorn. I got to have it. And it was what I thought was really fun was the lady that scanned our tickets, she knew you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You go there a lot.
Yep.
Just like I used to a long time ago. So you tell me the seat numbers. I go up there. I get the seats. And it was cool. They give you a comic book.
It was a comic book, yeah.
The Long Halloween, or is that what it's called?
Yeah, Long Halloween.
Long Halloween. They give you a comic book. It was get in the theater, and the atmosphere is electric.
Well, the fun thing was, it was electric, but it was somber. Like, everyone knew this wasn't about going to a party. This was like going to a funeral. So everyone was, they were piling in, they were, you know, talking, but it wasn't like a Marvel Endgame where people were just hooting and hollering.
Good point.
It was quiet.
Good point. Like, yeah. I will tell you, I get a little bit of anxiety with a movie theater that crowded.
Yeah.
I'm thinking there's always going to be a knucklehead that's going to be disturbing us, but people just even in the before the lights even went down,
yeah.
people were just very like kind of quietly talking to themselves.
Yeah.
So at about 7:08, like a little slideshow comes up on the screen, and it's just like still images from the Batman. It's a little yeah. countdown clock. I've never seen anything like this before.
No, and no previews
at all. 7:15, the movie starts.
Yep.
And I got to tell you, here's where things take a real serious turn for me. And I know people are expecting me to say something funny, but to the contrary, I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden, I start to feel really, really off. And my heart rate starts getting super, super elevated. And I'm starting to sweat a little bit. And I'm starting to get like my hands are starting to shake a little bit. And I'm going, oh my God, what's wrong? What's wrong? And my breathing becomes a little bit labored. And I'm like, holy shit, I think I'm having a heart attack. And I'm being dead serious. The movie's been on for 5 minutes and I'm sitting there going, I've got to get out of here. I've got to go, but I don't want to ruin your viewing of it. So I just politely lean in and said, I'll be back in a minute. And I went to the hallway and I mean, the movie's on. You're probably like, where the fuck is this guy going?
I thought you had diarrhea. Yeah. Like, there's got to be something going on.
Yeah. Because I'm like, who does that? Like, I literally just looked at you and said, I'll be back in a minute.
Well, so I assumed that you were like, all right, well, I've got to get some concessions now. So about 15 minutes later, I pulled out my phone. I'm like, all right, what the hell is going on? And I see your text like, hey, I'm having issues. I've got to go get checked out. And I just remember thinking like, oh my God, this continues your story. Like, yes. Worst theater experiences ever.
So I'm in the hallway of the theater and I'm going, oh, man, I really want to see this movie, but God, I can't ignore this.
Yeah.
I mean, I really can't. And anyone that's in their 40s,
oh, yeah,
you can't ignore something. Like, your body's telling you there's something wrong.
Yeah, you ignore that, you're 6 feet under.
So I quickly drive home, and then I get myself to the emergency room, and I'm there till, oh my God. But listen, I can't complain. I mean, I'm okay.
Yeah.
I'm okay, but I was there for a good 7 or 8 hours. Yeah. And it was, you know, EKG, chest x-ray, finally got the okay, like talked to the doctor. We talked about what could have caused this. But, you know, even he said, no, you made the right decision to come here. So,
absolutely. And then
the irony of this whole thing is, well, one of the ironies of this whole thing is that it's 3:30 in the morning. And I'm a guy who goes to bed like 10:30 every night. So I'm so tired. And I'm just like, I got dropped off. I called a friend and she dropped me off at the hospital. I didn't want to call an ambulance. I just wanted to and so I'm like, all right, that's cool. I'm just going to take an Uber home. No problem. I get outside. I can't connect to an Uber at 3:30 in the morning on a Tuesday. And I'm like, oh my God. And who am I going to call at 3:30 in the morning? I'm like, oh God. So I just start walking.
Oh, no.
I just start walking home. Like, I'm 4 miles, 4.5 miles away.
You should have called me. I would have come got you.
I just start walking home. And I'm just like, oh, my God. And all I'm sitting there going is fucking Regal Cinema. Every time. And every 10 minutes or so, I would just pull out the app on my phone, try to call an Uber. And by some miracle, I connected to one. After I walked about a mile, I connected to one. And the guy was right down the street, picked me up. And so turns out
you're some crazy guy on the sidewalk. Just
I was so worried about that, too. Thank God I've got a perfect 5-star rating on Uber.
That's where it becomes important.
That's exactly
right. Tip your Uber drivers.
This guy tells me that he was just wrapping up for the night. And if he hadn't taken my call, there wasn't another car in town.
Oh, wow.
And so I got home and obviously didn't get much sleep. My next day was ruined.
Oh yeah.
And I'm texting you like, I'm okay. I'm going to have to see this movie on Sunday because of my schedule. But you got a chance to see it.
Yeah. Saw it opening night.
Opening night. And you've seen it twice now.
I've been in for two. And I will say on opening night, kind of the same feeling at the beginning of it. You know, when you get to the Marvel Endgame, people were clapping, you know, just hooting, hollering. We, you know, this is amazing. We love this. At the end of this movie, everybody knows there's no post-credits scene. It's just the credits. Again, it was dead silent. No one clapping, no one applauding. I mean, just, it's like you've just finished like a really long funeral. It was so amazing to see that. And I remember thinking, I'm like, all right, someone's going to say, you know, make a smart comment. You know, emo Batman, you know, what do you think? But everyone filed out in just military order. It was wild.
This was the hardcore fans.
Yeah.
Like, this was...
Yeah, people started texting me, like, on Thursday, hey, do you want to see it on opening night? I'm like, yeah, I saw it 3 days ago.
Yeah.
I'm like, sorry.
I have to wait until we're recording on Sunday, the weekend that it came out. I had to wait until this morning to see it for a second time. And what was really interesting is that we go back to this whole Regal Cinema thing. There's nobody there.
Yeah.
I mean, it was empty. It was practically empty. 20 people in my IMAX. It seats almost 300 people. So I'm back to the twosies. I'm back doing my thing. And then, you know, I saw the movie today.
Well, that answers the question. I saw an article today about, can Robert Pattinson save movies? And doesn't sound like it.
Well, okay, so the numbers have, the preliminary numbers have come out as of recording this. Now, these numbers are subject to change. $125 million domestic opening. But that does, that counts the Tuesday, you know, and they did previews, you know, that counts the Tuesday, the Thursday, the Friday.
Yep.
By comparison, Spider-Man No Way Home that didn't have Tuesday previews did almost $250 million.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're going to get into it. Not to say that the other movie theater in town wasn't jam-packed. Nobody's going to this movie theater that we go to.
No.
Let's get into our initial impressions of the movie. And we're going to keep this spoiler-free for a little while.
As long as possible.
We'll certainly give everybody a spoiler warning, give you time to pause the recording until you see the film. But we'll keep it very spoiler-free right now. Jason, I'll start with you. You've seen it twice now. Just take me through initial impressions of the movie.
So I will say absolutely I liked it. I think Matt Reeves did an amazing job on the overall direction of the movie. I think the cinematography was just fantastic. I think the score and the music, it was almost imperceptible at times. I had to actually focus on what music was playing because it just went along so well. The cast, 80% of them, I really enjoyed. The overall length of the movie was a little bit long for me. But grading it on a scale of 10, I would give it at least an 8.5 out of 10.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be as favorable.
We haven't discussed this.
We just met up here a few minutes ago before we started recording. I said, I'm going to save my thoughts until we see the movie.
Yeah.
Initially, I thought I walked out of the theater and I was like, yeah, all right. And then the more the movie sort of started to sort of
sink in
a little bit, I was just like, there were long stretches of that film where I was just like, what's going on? Like, are we ever going to do anything Batman related? I mean, I understand this is very much a 1990s crime thriller. A lot of comparisons to the movie Seven, and that's very apropos. I see that.
Yeah.
But everything for me is sort of The Dark Knight Rises is sort of the benchmark. And both of those films have the action sequences at least every 15, 20 minutes. There's something of spectacle happening.
Yeah.
And with the case of Nolan films, it's very practical looking as well. And that's the case with this movie as well. When we actually get action sequences, I think they're very well done.
Oh, extremely well done.
It's in the trailer, so I'm not going to spoil it, but there's a Batmobile chase.
Yeah.
That is excellent.
Yeah.
It's excellent. Too far in between, though. Like, there's too much. To me, it was just, you talk about the length of the movie. I see a 2-hour and 15-minute movie when I watch this. I don't see a 3-hour film. And that really, I was feeling the runtime.
I don't see 3 hours. I definitely see 2.5, maybe 2:45. By the time I got to the end, I remember thinking, like, how many times are they going to meet at the bat signal? Yeah. Like, this is the fifth time. Like, you guys understand that cell phones exist. Like, can you not just call?
They're in the movie.
Gordon? Yeah. I mean, you don't need to meet there.
Batman's just gotta have him. A couple burner phones. I mean,
right?
Come on. Like, you get, yeah.
That's
you
right.
You can't send a text message in this day and age. That's a good point. It's a good evaluation.
Yeah.
But I'll also say that I'm not sure what this movie was supposed to be. What I mean by that is the opening, and we're keeping it spoiled. We're not going to talk about what happens in the opening, but the initial introduction to Batman is so, like, it's just so well done.
It is.
The buildup to his initial appearances. And then it was like mystery. He's in the shadows. And then he's in the movie more than any Batman character in the history of Batman movies. He is just permanently in this movie.
Yeah. So when you first meet Batman and his first encounter with crime, that was at that moment I went, this should have been rated R.
Yeah.
This is not a PG-13. Like, if this is the direction you're heading, pull a, 100% R. I mean,
you're straddling the line.
Yeah.
I mean,
you already are. Just dive over it. You got it.
I mean, because, look, the Joker was definitely rated R.
Oh, yeah.
There's an audience for those films. But you're right. It was, I will say this, of the 20 people that were in my theater, some people left, and those people had small children with them. And when I say small, I mean like 5 or 6 year olds. And you know,
not meant for that.
Not meant for that. This is where the PG-13 should really be enforced. Like if you're under 13, this is not the movie for you.
Yeah,
it's brutal in some parts, and there's a lot of implied brutality as well.
Yes,
you know, but you're right. They're pushing it right to the edge,
and they should have just
gone over the edge. Just make it R-rated.
I mean, not for the language of like Deadpool. You know, Deadpool it's an R because Ryan Reynolds loves saying the F word.
F word's used one time in this movie.
Is it?
Yeah, one time.
But if you're gonna employ that level of brutality, take it to the level that you're trying to make it. Don't pull that punch. Just do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So with what we talked about with the introduction of Batman, and I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Okay. This is going to be fun. I can tell.
Yeah.
Already.
This is, there's a lot going on in this movie. There's a lot to pay attention to. And, you know, this is one of those ones where I definitely felt like if I had to go to the bathroom, I'm going to miss something. And we'll get a little bit more into some of the plot details, if you will, when we get into spoilers. But there is three movies in here. There's the opening where the Batman is very elusive. And, you know, I can't stress, like, his introduction is so badass. Yeah. Like, I was just like, I'm in. And then it just becomes a straight-on detective movie.
That's, yes.
I mean, it's just we're looking for clues. We're figuring out ciphers. You know, there's people getting killed. And we're, you know, and then it becomes a third act comic book movie. Like, it's three different, there's three movies in here. I'm not sure which one I wanted the most. Like, I got a taste of three different things, and I'm not sure, you know, doing my post-mortem of the film, which one I would have preferred to have, which tone I would have preferred throughout the whole movie.
Yeah, I think the one that came through, and the one that I was expecting to come through, was the detective version of it. And the reason I enjoyed that aspect so much was this is the most Batman movie of all the Batman movies, in that Robert Pattinson is in nearly like 90% of the scenes. So when he's not Bruce Wayne, he's not always just Batman. Sometimes he's just a guy in a hoodie skulking through to make sure he's not noticed. So that was him being the detective. So, I mean, to me, it starts off as how all of them start off. Here's our hero, our vigilante. Here's our bad guy. And they're going to continuously work towards the final battle. This was, here's our vigilante. Here's our bad guy. But he's not really the bad guy. There's someone else out there that is pulling the strings behind the scenes. And that detective version of it was, to me, great. But like you said, yeah, he's fighting the Riddler while also working on the story.
Yeah.
I loved it.
No. And that's, I mean, I get that. I guess I get that. But I guess I didn't have those moments like I had in The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises. That this is so awesome. This is so epic. I can't believe I had a couple of those moments.
Well, I'll challenge that. To me, the best moments in the Dark Knight were from Heath Ledger, not so much from Christian Bale.
Well, I'll say, like, my favorite part of The Dark Knight is the underground chase with the Batmobile, the Tumbler, the Batcycle.
Yeah.
Like, that's my favorite sequence in the movie. And The Dark Knight Rises, admittedly, the opening Bane plane crash is pretty good, but I love the entire Wall Street heist. And like this, like I just, the Hans Zimmer score pumping, like I know my opinion on this film is going to shift a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
This has happened in the past, yeah.
If this ends up being a trilogy, this first movie is, I mean, the overall feel of it is going to change completely.
I left The Hateful Eight in 2015 going, that was all right. Now I think it's an absolute masterpiece. So I want to say that I don't die on the hill of how I initially feel after seeing a movie. And I will see this again.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll definitely see this again. But I won't die on the hill of, that's what I said, so I've got to stick to it.
Oh, of course, no. And, you know, as more movies come out and as things progress, I mean, I remember when Batman Begins came out, I thought that was the most brilliant movie I had seen in a decade. And then that's my least favorite of the trilogy.
Yeah.
I mean, not that it's a bad movie, but
no,
just, yeah.
So let's talk a little bit, let's talk about some of the characters just for a moment. And we're gonna, again, keeping this spoiler free as much as possible. So obviously the big talking point going into this film was that Robert Pattinson, we talked about it, you know, Sparkle Vampire, Robert Pattinson was taking up the helm of Batman.
Yep.
Now, I will just say that, and I think I went on record last time we recorded, that I was like totally okay with it. I'm like, cool. Yeah, I get it. I see it. I've seen it. Here's an interesting
thought. Where are you at now?
Here's an interesting thought. Good as Batman, okay as Bruce Wayne.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah,
see, that was, I don't know. We didn't spend enough time with Bruce Wayne to understand his motives. Everything was sort of, we're going to learn when he learns about things that have happened in the past, but with the, and I'm not saying I need an origin story, but I need possibly some time with Bruce Wayne before we see him as Batman to kind of set up the type of person that he is. Like with at least Batman Begins, you know, we see the transformation into Batman. We see everything that Bruce Wayne went through. Yeah. I'm not saying I need it on that level, but I'm just saying I would have maybe spent at least a couple scenes with Bruce Wayne to understand why he's so tortured. I mean, obviously we know why, but that's for me, that's my initial impression of what I think I would have preferred to have seen.
So here's where I took it, or at least the way I understood it in this movie. There is no Bruce Wayne.
No.
He does not exist. Robert Pattinson as Bruce Wayne is Batman, and slight spoiler at the beginning of the movie. I mean, probably in the first couple minutes, he's explaining that he writes a diary because the days are just blending together and he's become a nocturnal animal and that there's no Bruce. And I'm at one point, Alfred even says, oh, is Bruce Wayne going to make an appearance?
No, you know, you're right. You're right.
So to me, I enjoyed the fact that Christian Bale kind of took it as a dual persona. There's Batman, there's Bruce Wayne. And Michael Keaton, the other favorite, took it as almost the same thing. There's Bruce Wayne, who's just a shell of a person, and there's Batman. I thought Robert Pattinson and Matt Reeves took it more towards the Michael Keaton version.
There's a little bit of exposition, like you just said, and there's a scene where candidate for mayor approaches Bruce Wayne and says, you know, your family is known for, and this is in the trailer as well, so not a spoiler, you know, your family's known for its philanthropy, yet we haven't seen anything.
You're not doing anything.
I guess maybe I just would have liked to seen maybe just a day in the life of what Bruce Wayne is doing.
I don't think he's doing anything.
I don't think he's doing
anything. I think he's sleeping during the day to fight crime at night.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. But this is not to knock the performance by Robert Pattinson.
No.
As Batman, kind of badass. I'm not going to lie. Kind of badass. Like,
he's square jawed.
Again, minor spoiler, but if you follow the Batman storyline, he's not a gun guy. He doesn't use guns.
No.
And he references that, no guns in this film. But man, does he ever beat the shit out of people? More so, he beats people down more brutal than anything I've seen before.
Oh yeah, and not just that. I would venture to say, I'll let the fans contradict me on this. I think he takes more gunshots in this movie than any previous Batman combined in the rest of the movies.
There is a scene where he is literally getting lit up by automatic rifles.
Yeah.
And it's brutal. You're like, holy shit. So, I mean, again, the more we talk about it, the more the movie's going to open up for
me.
And I understand that's the story. Like, I understand that's why we like to have these conversations.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I just keep it all bottled inside and I'm like,
oh, no. And I mean, having viewed what Twitter thinks about this, there's no, does not appear there's a middle ground.
Oh, see, I can be in the middle.
They're not on Twitter, apparently. I mean, people either just think it's emo Batman, wrong choice, or they're a 10 out of 10. I mean, his performance wasn't perfect.
No.
But it was original, and it was appreciated.
He wasn't trying to be Christian Bale.
Yes.
He wasn't trying to be Michael Keaton.
He took the role and made it his own.
Correct. And that's what you, I mean, that you have to, I mean, they're going to keep making Batman movies long after you and I are gone.
Yeah.
You know, and they're going to continue to tell these stories forever. So different iterations, make it your own. And he did. So let's talk about Zoe Kravitz, Selena Kyle, Catwoman.
I was going to say,
I was going to go with the, she's fine in the movie.
She does okay.
She's fine.
Don't
know her story.
Well, we explain it a little bit,
but don't know what her day-to-day life's like. She's not a secretary for Christopher Walken.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to denigrate what she did, but action scenes were fantastic.
Absolutely.
I didn't get any emotion from her. You know, when she's talking about her friend who's missing and she's trying to find her, I feel it right there, but the rest of the movie, she should have a more, you know, based on the character you find out who she is later, she should have a more emotional response to all of this. But it doesn't come through. It
was a little flat. I will say though, to second what you said about the fighting sequences, excellent.
Yeah.
And she is stunningly beautiful.
Oh man.
And she's wearing different wigs in certain scenes of the movie. That doesn't matter what look she has, she is stunningly beautiful.
I remember watching her walk down one of the hallways and I was like, I have never seen anyone walk that sexy before.
You saw it too.
I remember thinking she's
walking with this kind of swagger that I'm just like, oh my God, like she is stunningly gorgeous.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're just getting, here is a day in the life of these characters. We're not going to hold
your
hand.
That's what it felt because, you know, unlike Batman Begins or, you know, Dark Knight or even, you know, Dark Knight Rises, this entire movie takes place over about 5 days.
Yeah.
So there's not a long backstory, a pause, let's stop and evaluate. It's a 5 day window.
Yeah.
So it.
Yeah. I mean, we're joining something already in progress.
Yeah.
You know, Colin Farrell as the Penguin.
You mean Robert De Niro?
Right. He's literally the makeup and he is doing Robert De Niro.
I could have watched this movie 100 times. If you had not told me that was Colin Farrell, there is no way I would have recognized him.
At this point,
I mean, come on.
There is not, and kudos to the makeup department and kudos to his performance.
Yes.
Because, like, I agree with you. If I didn't know, I would have never in a million years guessed. I would have thought that was some character actor that they just brought out of retirement who hasn't acted in 20 years because very limited in the movie, but what he is in is memorable.
Yeah. And, you know, he's that slimy kind of, you know, gun against his head, could be dead in 2 seconds, and he's negotiating his way out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, he just, to me, he was one of the better performances in the movie. You hated him and you loved him all at once.
And, you know, HBO Max is moving forward with a couple TV series based off of this world that's been created. And from what I understand, he's going to be a main character.
If he does, oh man.
So if he's going to sign up for it. Moving on to the list. I was surprised to see John Turturro in the film because I went the opposite of you. I went very, did not pay attention.
Media neutral.
I wanted to know as little as possible. So, you know, he's Carmine Falcone. That was the Eric Roberts character from The Dark Knight.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So so this is a legacy character who's just been part of the Batman universe for a while. He's John Turturro. I mean, what do you say? This is a very minor performance by him. I mean, he's not Miller's Crossing. He's not Barton Fink. He is very subdued in this film.
Yeah, I will say if his performance had come across better, this would have been a 9 out of 10. I thought he did terribly.
Okay.
He comes across with this just flat affect. He's every conversation he has, he can be talking about murdering someone or meeting someone. He's in the middle of killing someone and his voice just does not rise above. He's like, I'm sorry, I've got to kill you, but I'm going to go ahead and have to kill you.
Yeah.
It's like, where's your passion?
This is going to hurt me more than it hurts you. You know, he's very,
just,
All right.
Maybe he was trying to play it that way, just a deadpan, you know, no emotion psychopath, but it came across to me just a little too flat.
Andy Serkis as Alfred, very limited in this movie.
Very limited.
Surprisingly limited in this film.
Matt Reeves, who used him in all of the last two Planet of the Apes. I mean, I was expecting, in the previous movies, Alfred plays such a huge role as a, you know, compatriot of Bruce Wayne. And in this, you get maybe 4 minutes of screen time?
Total.
I was expecting to see. Maybe we're going to get that in a future one. But,
you know, much like the previous Batman films, Alfred does offer some expertise and some assistance and, you know,
it's emotional support.
And he's like, hey, I was working on this one. Some of this evidence you found, I was working on this, you know. So they have a relationship, but it's a very deteriorated relationship.
I mean, it feels like Alfred wanted Bruce to be Bruce and not the Batman.
You know, thinking out loud right now, and I know this is going to sound crazy. People think I'm getting nuts. I kind of wish I would have had the origin story of how we got to. I kind of want to see how we got to. We're 2 years into Batman. That's what this movie posits. I feel like I would have wanted to see that.
And maybe we'll get that in some flashbacks. And I mean, two. The second movie is always the darkest.
Yeah.
So maybe we get the. I mean, we actually never. Well, spoiler. We never see the death of Bruce Wayne's parents.
For like the first time. This is like the first time.
Maybe we get to see that. Maybe that's what they're holding back on, is that how that transformed him from a, you know, a 10-year-old kid to where we're at now.
Jeffrey Wright playing not Commissioner Gordon.
No.
I think he's Lieutenant.
Lieutenant Detective.
Lieutenant
I mean,
Detective, yeah.
He did a great job.
He's phenomenal in this film. And it occurs to me, like, much like the Jim Gordon characters in previous... Well, I'm comparing The Dark Knight, okay?
Right.
You know, he's the one good cop.
Yes.
You know, but he just commands a lot of respect and pull from the other police officers. Like, you know, he's involving Batman in a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, he brings Batman into crime scenes.
Yeah.
The one thing I love about him is just his voice. Yeah. I mean, the same gravitas that he had in the James Bond movies as Felix from the CIA, you know, when he's brings Batman in and they're having that face-to-face conversation, he's like, you're going to have to punch me in the face.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, just a deep, dark voice. Every line that he says just comes across so expertly said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I really loved his performance.
I agree. So, and that's going to – one more character we're going to talk about real quick is going to be Paul Dano.
Yes.
As the Riddler. Whew. Now, the trailers purposely show you very little of him. And – in all fairness, he's not in the movie very much as – he's in the movie less than the Joker is in The Dark Knight.
I think you get more videotape of him than you do of actual
– absolutely.
Yeah, on screen.
And then when you – I'm not going to get into the whole specifics, but when you really get to see his character, he's phenomenal. He's so good. He's so good. And that leaves me wanting more of him. It's like, wait, we have to get to the third act before we really get to see him take the gloves off.
Yeah.
And it's by that point, I'm suffering from running time fatigue.
Yes.
And I'm not sure if I can appreciate just how good his performance is. And from what I've been reading, like, he was insistent on multiple takes with Matt Reeves. Like, no, I got to do that again. I can do it better. I can do it deeper. He is just one of those. You know, if you've never seen There Will Be Blood.
Oh, man.
I mean, he pulls off this character so authentically that I was like, there wasn't a moment where I'm like, nope, I believe that guy is absolutely nuts.
And this is one you even can't compare him to Heath Ledger as the Joker because they are so far apart. And I mean, I think you said it expertly. He just... his performance in this was, bar none, the best Riddler. But again, we compare it to Jim Carrey's green leotard.
Correct.
Version.
Yeah. The bar was low. The bar had been set very low for the Riddler character, almost to the point where when you find out the Riddler is going to be the bad guy, we're going to do an eye roll. Oh, shit. Here we go.
My biggest complaint, and it's not with his performance, it's really with a story that the way he communicates with the Batman throughout the entire movie is via greeting cards. I would have preferred a, you know, they don't talk until, what is it?
It's 2 hours
and 40 minutes.
Yeah, I think it's about two and a half hours into the film. Yeah. And by that point, you're a little wore out.
You are. So, I mean, my one criticism of the story, and not Paul Dano, because he was just amazing, was they should have put those two together an hour and a half into it.
We should have known how crazy the Riddler was within the first half an hour of the movie.
Yes.
We understand in the first 20 minutes of The Dark Knight when the Joker has that meeting with the mob and makes the pencil disappear trick. Like you have, I mean, I guess with the Riddler, you know, there are crimes happening, there are murders happening, and they're very brutal. And so you understand like what he's capable of, but
you miss that element of interaction because everything you see is just him on screen.
With a mask.
You don't even get to interact with him personally.
It's just, I don't know. We're going to have to get into spoilers here pretty soon before we can get there. Let's talk about, do we do the good, the bad, and the technical non-spoilery, or do we?
No, I think just rip the band off.
All right, let's see. Where are we at? We're at 39 minutes in the recording.
Okay.
So at this point, we're going to go full-on spoilers for Matt Reeves, the Batman. If you haven't seen the movie yet, and you don't want things spoiled, I would tell you to just pause this recording, come back to us after you've seen it. Or if you don't care, you're just listening for whatever, you've been warned. So spoilers in 3, 2, 1, boom.
So Michael Keaton shows up 20 minutes in. No.
Yeah.
And Tobey Maguire.
You should have seen the face of I'm like, did I miss that? Yeah. Just getting back to the whole Paul Dano thing now that we can get into spoilers. Like, he turns into Heath Ledger's the Joker in the last 20 minutes of the film as far as his plan. He's blowing shit – he turns into Bane, basically.
Yeah.
Blowing up different parts of Gotham. I thought that was clever with the seawall and literally flooding the whole city. That was interesting.
Just watch – so, and I'm not sure if it's foreshadowing or not, but one thing I loved about the movie is it rained – the entire time. Like, rain was a character in the movie. And I remember thinking, like, why is this? Are they set in Seattle? I don't remember a Gotham this wet. And then watching him in the Arkham Asylum as the bombs were going off, just boom, boom. Yeah. And watching the water flood in, I'm going,
the rain got to me. And I think that might have been on purpose, because it got to me in 7. It was always raining in 7.
Yeah.
And rain, we associate rain with gloominess. You know, I wake up in the morning. I like to sit outside. I live in Florida. Yeah. I like to sit outside with a cup of coffee in the morning. And if it's raining, that's ruined.
Yeah.
I can't do it. And so if it's raining all day, we subconsciously associate that with just, this sucks and this is gloomy. But when it's a beautiful day out and there's not a cloud in the sky, like, we're the first to say, oh my God, it's so nice out today. So the fact that it was always raining in Gotham, I think, is a very smart decision by Matt Reeves to sort of set that gloominess about the city.
And not just that. I mean, I think I'm just thinking of just a handful of scenes that actually took place during the day. Like, the majority of this movie took place at night when it's raining. And I remember halfway through, you feel damp. You're like, it's pervasive. I mean, it was a great decision to do that. But when those bombs do go off and the water starts flooding in, I will admit I felt claustrophobic, because you're watching, you know, you see the map of how the bombs are going off and how the water is going to come in. I remember thinking, like, this is...
I had a small issue with this, with this part. So Gotham is clearly a city of millions of people. Mm-hmm. It's a large city. All right. Why are you taking everyone to Madison Square Garden? There are 100 high rises that are 25 stories or more. Why are you not just telling people,
yeah, go up 2 stories. Go. There were quite a few holes that I had out there.
That was the one part I'm like, okay, this is clearly supposed to be a Madison Square Garden thing. Like, that goes down. Yeah. The water's going to come down.
Like, this is the haven for everyone. Well, yeah, in a hurricane, but
yeah,
we got, you know, 3 feet of water. Just
didn't we not see the day after tomorrow? Like, this is on, you go up.
Yeah.
You go up. That was just my small little gripe with it.
Well, my other big, I'll tell you my other big gripe when – the chase scene.
Yeah.
I love the chase scene. Watching the penguin go down the road and watching the Batman chase him. My son actually leaned over. He's like, this is like how you drive to school. Like, all right, without the explosions or whatever. But I would say the penguin hit 20, 30 cars, $10 million worth of damage. They finally catch him. They are chasing him because of a dead body in the trunk of one of his cars. And they just leave him there. I'm like, yeah, don't worry about it. You're fine.
Yeah, we're too focused on trying to solve.
We got bigger fish to
figure out who the Riddler is. Like, so what do you have for the good?
For the good, I would say I really enjoyed the fact that there was no Wayne Manor. There was no Wayne Estate with hundreds of servants out there. It was Wayne Tower. It was Bruce Wayne downtown, just in the center of everything. I really like that. I really enjoyed that the detective version of this, in that he was in and out of his bat suit, that overall it felt more like, we mentioned, you know, Seven, it also felt like The Game.
Oh, yeah.
I at some point I'm like, it kind of feels like The Game out there. I really liked when after the DA had been killed and he's in the police station and, you know, a bunch of cops getting ready to fight him. He goes up to the roof to jump off, and you can visibly tell he's freaked out. So I'm expecting Batman to get up to the top of the roof and get ready to jump and just, you know, no hesitation whatsoever, jumping into the night. And you can see the fear in his eyes.
He was just like, oh my God.
Yeah. And he jumps off the roof and uses his suit to glide out over the roads. And in true year two fashion, just gets the shit knocked out of him. Hits a bus, hits a car, you know, goes down the road. Just, I
appreciated that scene too, because even I had that moment when he just, you know, when he rappels, goes up, that nice shot of him going up.
Yeah.
You know, which is clear, like they clearly shot that in camera with him, like being, he's got the grappling gun and he's going up the police station. And then when he comes out and you hear that whole, like, oh, like he's like, oh, how high am I? And I'm like, oh, awesome. He's got a wingsuit. Awesome. All right, cool. This is going to be fun. And then he just eats it.
Oh,
and he just bites it. He pulls the parachute, but he doesn't, he pulls it and gets caught on an overpass. Yeah. And he just eats it. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I appreciate that little, like, he's not flawless.
No, and I remember thinking, like, that looks like it hurt more than the bomb that just went off that knocked him out there. So watching all that just damage happen to him, and where you get to at the end of the movie, which I think what they were intimating was the Bane venom, maybe?
Possibly.
Could be adrenaline, who knows? Just to see the overall beating that he takes just for Gotham. And my last big one is, to me, one of the biggest unseen characters in this movie is Gotham.
Yeah.
I think this is the first movie that just really gets into the decay of the city. You know, they mention it in Batman Begins with Ra's al Ghul, like, we've tried to destroy Gotham. But you don't see it until now. And I thoroughly enjoyed seeing how just terrible the city is, and hearing Robert Pattinson say, I've been doing this for 2 years and it's gotten worse. And he's just trying to decide, am I making it worse? Am I making it better? So it's kind of transformative, you know, the way he sees the city from beginning to end. But those are my biggest goods.
The one thing that, well, there's a few goods for me, but one of the things that I appreciate about this film, and take this, listeners, don't take this the wrong way, okay? But I appreciate it, is that it was grounded in some form of reality. You mentioned the whole thing with Batman, he's not perfect. He fucks up and he crashes and he gets the shit kicked out of him and he gets injured. But much like the Dark Knight films, like, this is a world in which there aren't people with superpowers.
No, there's no, yeah.
This is a real This is like a real world setting, and there are consequences to those falls. I mean, there's, you see him without a shirt on, his back's all scarred up and bruised and everything. So I appreciated the fact that the movie was grounded in, I won't say pure reality, but it was certainly grounded in a reality. It makes it plausible for you as the viewer to say, yep, that would really, really hurt.
Yeah.
Whereas when Superman gets a bus thrown at him, you're like, hey, he's all right. Yeah, he's fine. Wonder Woman, she's fine. He's fine. Aquaman, whatever.
There's mortality to the character.
There's mortality, just like there is to the Punisher. And I'm always going to get more on board with those type of comic book movies.
Right.
That's just a personal preference. So that's one of the things I appreciated. That's one of the good things. We mentioned the Batmobile.
Oh, yeah.
Seeing this thing in IMAX, all right, the sound design. Like, I beg everyone, when this movie comes out on HBO Max, those of you that are not going to see this until it comes out on HBO Max, which is it was a 45-day theatrical window. So the countdown is on. It's 5 weeks it'll be on HBO Max.
Okay.
I beg you, if you're going to watch this on your phone, which some of you will, that's the world we live in, have your AirPods in. You have really good headphones, because the sound design in this movie, particularly the first time that Batmobile starts up, I was digging that. That brought me out of a slump, because I was really, I'm not going to lie, this movie was a bit of a chore to get through. Yeah. It's just, it is way too long.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just in the IMAX alone, I would encourage everyone to see that. When Robert Pattinson first walks out in his first scene to confront this gang, you can feel his footsteps in your chest. It goes on that long, and they get that more intense. But when the Batmobile comes out and that engine kicks on, I mean, I remember just thinking, like, I couldn't stop smiling. Like, that is awesome. You never even get a really good view of it, but just seeing it, I mean, it looks like, I don't even know, the Bumblebee from Transformers Camaro in black with a jet engine on the back.
Yeah.
I mean,
it sounds like a jet engine,
it
too.
It does.
Like, you hear it winding up.
And every character on screen, when that thing kicks on, just stops and turns and looks. And you see the fear in their eyes just on the sound of that.
It reminded me of the scene in The Dark Knight Rises when you see the bats. The first time that thing fires up. You might get the wrong animal there. A couple other things that would fall under the good category for me would be, you know, we talked about Colin Farrell's performance.
Oh, yeah.
I do like Pattinson as Batman. I mean, I do. I would have preferred a little bit more in the shadows. You know, is there such thing as too much on-screen Batman?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. But he's consistent throughout the film.
Yeah.
You know, he's not doing – and can we just say thank you, Robert Pattinson, for not doing a voice that –
for all
the praise we heap on the Nolan trilogy, we all can admit that Bale takes it a little much with the voice sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, but even Michael Keaton too.
Yeah.
All of them did, but he kept his speaking to a minimum with the bad group when he's with Selena. He sounded like himself.
Yeah.
And I don't know how I don't know how anybody around him that often didn't just go, Bruce Wayne? You sound like Bruce Wayne.
Yeah. You know, in the real world, that would happen.
Yeah.
You're definitely Bruce Wayne. All right. So what do you have for the bad?
For the bad, to me, this is my biggest the bad. With Batman and Catwoman, who they never actually say, Selina Kyle is Catwoman. There's no love story there. There is an attraction.
There's an attraction. There's a kiss.
There's a kiss. At the end of it, she asks him, are you asking me to stay? And he just doesn't say anything. Like, I was expecting, I would like for you to stay, but, you know, maybe my life is complicated or, you know, whatever. I was expecting some romance. You should get that in a Batman movie. You got that in Batman Begins with Katie Holmes, or at least a longing for being some kind of normal person. And that just, it fell really flat here. Which I think is probably why the Zoe Kravitz's character to me just felt a little underdefined.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Some of those inconsistencies we already talked about. John Turturro, watching him try to kill Zoe Kravitz with just, I mean, he could have either been trying to kill Zoe Kravitz or a fly. I didn't get hardly any emotion.
No, I didn't either. I'm almost expected him to not really be doing, like, okay, you know what?
Yeah, and he was, for those who have seen it and we're past the spoilers, he's the bad guy.
Yeah.
He is the one that we have to face off against. I mean, the Riddler is the one who wants him caught, but for all of that, even when he is finally caught and he's being drug out, you expect him to just, you know, rage. But the best you get is, oh, that's what you got, huh? That's what you got. I mean, it was like Jesus from The Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
for me, the overwhelming, like, the bad portion of this discussion for me, and it's, there's no, like, thinking about it, it's the runtime of this movie.
Yeah.
This is, and I'm not even going to say in my opinion, it's a fact. This movie is too long.
It is too long.
It is too long. And I was, by the time we get to the third act, which has the most spectacle in it, I was so ready for this movie to be over because there are some parts of this film that just drag and drag and drag.
Yeah.
And I may feel differently about this on subsequent future viewings because I'll have a better grasp of what I'm going to watch and I can see performances being more nuanced. And you're right. Things can change with a sequel. A sequel can make you look at things a little bit differently. But as it stands right now, I mean, you mentioned it before we started recording. This kind of had a Return of the King vibe in the sense that
you're done and then you're like, wrap it up.
It needed, like you said, the Dave Chappelle button.
The Dave Chappelle button.
Wrap it up button. Because we were just like, even I was like,
yeah.
Can we end this? Like, you could trim 15 minutes off the ending.
Oh, yeah.
And leave it alone.
Yeah.
And I think the one of the things that bothered me about this is I knew the runtime.
Yeah. That's a bad thing. And
I remember looking at my watch and going, this has only been on for an hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah.
There's almost 2 hours left in this film. And I'm already like, I'm feeling the runtime. I think you can do a 2 hour and 15, 2 hour and 20 minute movie. I think you can.
I think you cut out a couple of the bat signal scenes. And how many times did he go to the club?
Oh,
I mean, with the twins. You know, you could lose two trips to the club and two trips to the tower, handle it with a phone call or some surveillance and like, hey, I set up a camera and here's what I found.
For as expansive as Gotham City is, this story is very contained to only a few locations.
Yeah.
That's another thing.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't even think about that.
You know, it's a very contained story.
Well, and then after they find the Riddler's apartment and they find the Riddler, and you think, all right, it's done. And then he visits the Riddler. And then he goes back to the apartment. And then the scene takes on from there. It's like, it just, from the what I thought was the climax of the movie to where it actually ended, it was like 25 minutes.
I think Matt Reeves was trying to do too many aha moments.
Yeah.
I see what's going on. Oh.
Yeah.
But even those can get watered down when you do so many of them. But you're absolutely right. And by the way, like, his apartment, that scene was shot for shot seven.
That was seven.
That was shot for shot seven with the journals and everything. Like, who are we kidding?
Yeah.
Like, I know there's a whole generation that have never seen 1995's David Fincher directed seven. I know there's a lot out there that haven't seen it. But trust me when I tell you that was a shot for shot.
Well, and also check out Zodiac.
Exactly. I mean,
that costume that Paul Dano wears could be ripped right out of Zodiac from David Fincher.
Absolutely. So I don't want to dwell much more on the bad because I think a lot of my issues with the movie could have been solved with a shorter running time.
Yeah, I agree.
So what do you got for the technical?
The technical, outside of the direction we've already talked about, the cinematography.
Gorgeous. It's amazing.
I mean, just fantastic.
There's
the
some
feel of it.
There's some CGI in here, but a lot of the cinematography, a lot of that is just really good in-camera stuff.
So, you know, I did not know who the cinematographer was. It was Greg Fraser, who did The Mandalorian, Dune, Rogue One, Killing Them Softly, Foxcatcher. So all of these.
He did Dune?
He did Dune.
Which one? The 84 or the recent
one? The recent one. And Zero Dark Thirty. Lion.
Zero Dark Thirty is awesome.
So it just, you know, seeing the caliber of what he's done, it's gritty, it's dark. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I get it now. I get it because Dune is visually stunning.
It is. And you can see, you know, there's darkness all around in this movie, but it's not a blackness. It's peppered with reds and yellows. And, you know, when you're in the club and it's dark and there's fight scenes, the way that it's lit too is just, I mean, it's fantastic. The way he overall conceptualizes Gotham is just, it's a whole new universe. It's nothing we've seen in a previous Batman movie.
I agree. I would have liked to see more of Gotham. What's unique to Gotham?
Yeah.
I get their whole version of Times Square, which was really cool, but what else is unique to Gotham? And to speak about Nolan, when you look at The Dark Knight in The Dark Knight Rises, he doesn't really do that either. At least in the Batman Begins, they've got that, you know, monorail subway and all that. That's very unique to Gotham.
Yeah.
So, but obviously The Dark Knight, especially Dark Knight Rises, is an amalgamation of L.A., New York, Chicago, Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
You know.
I might be in the minority on this. I absolutely loved Nirvana's Something in the Way in the beginning and end of this. But I read that, you know, Matt Reeves had been listening to Nirvana, and that's kind of one of his inspirations for the feel of the movie. But when that song comes on, it blends. I mean, it works seamlessly into the overall scene.
I wonder if that song is lost on the younger generation.
It's got to be, because it's
30 years old.
Yeah. It's the one from, it sounds like it's the one from, what's it called? The MTV Unplugged?
Yeah, it does.
I mean, just this acoustic version of Kurt Cobain, putting out there what it felt like on the screen.
Okay.
And then the overall music.
Yeah, the soundtrack was one. The score, musical score was wonderful.
Yeah.
It really was. Wasn't Hans Zimmer. He wasn't trying to do Hans Zimmer.
No.
You know, but it was good. I mean, we'll have to see as far as how much, you know, I don't know if they do another one of these movies.
No, I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, this thing is...
We'll see how it plays out. I mean, it looks like it's going to have a huge opening weekend.
Right now, what I'm seeing is about a 230, 240 worldwide opening weekend. Be interesting to see. Because this thing's going to have to... It's going to have to hit a billion for... Or HBO will just do a Disney...
Or you'll get the worst sequel. You'll get a series.
You'll get a series.
Batman Returns.
I'm going to ask you. You said you'd give this a 9 out of 10.
8.5.
8.5 out of 10. Eight and a half out of 10. After having a little discussion with you, I'm going to go 6 out of 10, wow, which is a little bit above average.
Okay.
We didn't plan this, but if I was to rank my favorite Batman movies in order,
okay,
from number one would be The Dark Knight Rises, number two would be The Dark Knight, number three would be Batman 89, number four would be Batman Begins, number five would be The Batman,
okay,
would be this one, and then the rest are just interchangeable. The rest I equally dislike. So I would put this as my fifth favorite Batman movie.
So I would say The Dark Knight Rises, The Dark Knight, The Batman, Batman Begins, Batman, and then probably fill in a Ben Affleck.
Yeah. Once you get past
that.
Once you get past my five, I'm not even interested.
Yeah, then you have to go into, yeah. Maybe the Lego Batman.
Yeah, Will Arnett.
Will Arnett.
He is a great Batman.
He does.
So that's gonna do it for us on this discussion of Matt Reeves, the Batman.
Yeah.
Interesting journey for us to get to this conversation. It was a hell of a week, I can tell you that.
Took a trip to the ER to get here.
What was the joke you said? You said you were enjoying the first 10 minutes of what did you say in the text message?
The first 10 minutes was so good, you had a heart attack.
It was so good. I was reading that. I lost my mind when you did that. So what's next? What's coming out next? Like what's on the horizon? Obviously for me, it's Top Gun Maverick. That's the end of May.
Yep.
But I know there's a Morbius movie coming out April 1st. There's a Harry Potter,
Dumbledore.
Yeah. You know,
outside of all the big sequels, you know, you may have seen the preview for Nope.
Yeah. That's got my interest. That's for sure.
I'm really looking forward to that one.
What about the Jurassic Park one? I could care less. I'm being honest. I could give a shit.
My kids love those. Sure. So I'll go see them. No, I mean, outside of that, it's we're coming up on blockbuster season. So yeah. I'm just hoping there's a few gems out there, few and far between that someone told me the other day, like, have you watched Uncharted? I'm like, that's out. Really?
Yeah, that's
I've
said this before with the Uncharted. Like I'm an Xbox guy. I've never played the Uncharted games. If I'm going to see a Tom Holland movie, I probably would see the Spider-Man movie, and I haven't seen that one as of recording this.
Really?
Yeah,
I still haven't seen it. Oh man.
For me though, I'm like just looking at. Obviously, when we get into the fall, there's always going to be some prestige movies coming out that'll probably catch my interest. But this one, The Batman, was a really anticipated film for me. Obviously, Top Gun Maverick is my most anticipated film of the year, followed very closely by Avatar 2, which is coming out in December. Now, I recently had David Weiner on.
Listened to that. It was a great podcast.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. So you heard him talk about it. He's interviewed Cameron. And we could have kept... We were there to talk about his new movie, but you get me on the subject of James Cameron movies. It was somebody who knows him
and
can speak to him. Like, never count Cameron out. We're 13 years removed from Avatar, which I'll admit is a movie I have not revisited in years.
I just rewatched it about 3 months ago.
Readily available on Disney Plus, but I haven't rewatched it in years. I saw it IMAX 3D. It was a game changer watching that. But even I'll admit that movie is way too long.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But with Cameron, we're going to see things we've never seen before. That's his MO.
And I think we talked about this before. That's what I'm looking forward to. I did not like Avatar. I mean, I did not like Avatar, but I like what he did to movies through Avatar.
Yeah. So I'll be very interesting. Yeah. I mean, for me, who's somebody who's so pro practical effects, Avatar is the furthest, away from.
It's as close to Pixar as you can get.
It's literally an animated film.
Yeah.
So anyway, those are the films that I'm looking forward to. At least Avatar 2 has my curiosity.
Yeah.
So Jason, thanks again. We'll do this. We're just gonna keep them coming.
We have to pick another subject,
another movie series, a franchise, something. Listeners, let us know.
Yeah, tell us.
You can follow this show on Instagram at The Dana Buckler Show. You can follow me on Instagram at The Dana Buckler. I'm on Twitter at Dana Buckler. The show's on Twitter at The Dana Buckler Show. And you can email me, thedanabucklershow@gmail.com. Jason, thanks again, man.
Right on.
All right, cool. We'll talk soon. And my name's Dana Buckler, and thank you so much for listening.